John Wanover, beginning the first visit with Debbie, is Sunday about noon, the 12th of November, 72. John Wanover, beginning of the first visit with Debbie, is Sunday about noon, the 12th of November, 72. John Wanover, and beginning the first visit with Debbie, is Sunday about noon, the 12th of November, 72.
I'm fine.
I see if I can feel your ribs like you could last summer.
No, I don't think so. I've been sitting too much lately.
Well, I didn't know about that.
Whether I've been sitting?
Yeah.
All this week I have been. Wow. I got a letter from Eddie. I brought it out to read to you. It's so funny. He sent me a...
Oh, you mean he writes letters?
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't think he would, but he did. He wrote me a letter and he sent me... This is, well, when, the day that I left, he called me upstairs and gave me a stack of programs from his variety show.
All right.
So he sent me another one.
God almighty, you'll have a file on Eddie.
On Eddie, because he sent me another one, and then he sent me this marvelous letter. I didn't think he'd write to me. I had written him a letter. And then he sent me this stack. It's a really long letter, look.
And look how little
he's 81.
Long 81.
I found out the last show that I went to with him, he's 81 years old. And that's, I have about 10 more. And he writes on the top of each one why they gave it, you know, who, how many children died and what fire and why they gave the program.
Oh, I know.
They're all old, though. I mean, well, that one's 70. I've got some real antiquities. Some of them are from 55.
Now, he probably turned them out himself. Or their children do.
No, I think the people that, where he gives them, do the programs. He doesn't have, I don't think he does the programs himself.
Yeah.
Like if he does a benefit show for he's doing one for the Order of the Eastern Star, and the Order of the Eastern Star printed the programs for him. That's his big show that's coming up. So I imagine that the people that printed that were the American Legion. Isn't that the American Legion?
Yeah.
They probably printed the programs. Because generally when he just goes around to the hospitals, he doesn't print programs. They just put up a little sign and say that he's coming.
But the only place you can get that gaunt look is in here.
Apparently so.
That's the only place.
That's it. I have to go back. You get fat in this country. That's all. You eat too much and you get fat.
Well, there's no place to stretch. Stretch
That's
your legs.
Right.
No place.
That's right.
Well, you say you can do it around here, but I don't see anyone doing it. It's in the climate. It's in the mind mentality. Somehow, I don't know. I just don't understand that. Now, that's one thing. Now, speaking French over there, I guess you have to, that's a stage you have to go through. But that other... Out on the road, now that's another thing.
Uh-huh.
Over there.
Yeah.
I just lumped that all that niece thing. I think that was, you know, I was just talking. that was heavy on your spirit. But you take that Corsica thing, and then afterwards, up in northern France, where you moved.
Uh-huh. Well, let me read you Eddie's letter. I love it. I've got to write to him tonight. He told me when I left, he said, "Now I have a girlfriend in Florida." And I promised him I'd send him a picture. He loves me. He says, "Dearest Debbie, it's like a morgue here since you left. You certainly kept your word in writing to me. The hardest thing for me to do is write a letter, but not to you. You are an exception, and I'm not kidding. All is okay here, but the weather is rotten. Drizzle, cloudy, and very cool.
He's not literally.
No. He's a mailman. I gave your message to Andy and Mary, and they liked you very much. The leaf situation is terrible. Clean it up one day, and it's worse the next. We have had high winds.
Leaf. Yeah.
Get the leaves up before the snow. You can't leave leaves on the grass. It'll kill the grass once it snows on it. A fellow was supposed to come yesterday to fix two sash cords downstairs, but he didn't come. Also, another bird was supposed to come to fix the cracked window in Betsy's dining room, and he really came and replaced it in no time. I have also tried to get somebody to come to put new paper in Betsy's front hall, but I could not get anyone. It is just a small job. I'm pretty sure I contacted someone on the phone just now. Anyway, we had a pretty good show at the Brighton Marine last Wednesday, but as usual, a small crowd. That's an understatement. There are usually about five people in the crowd. Every time I'd go with him, he'd say, I'll sure and reserve you a seat, and there'd be nobody there. That's a big benefit at Somerville High last Friday. 2 hours, 26 acts, a good crowd and very receptive. The stage lighting was very poor and the mic was far from good, but we overcame it. One brand new act, a little boy 9 years old with his ragtime accordion. He was a Sharpie and he was handsome. Did a good job with three numbers, Raindrops. I guess that was one of the songs that he did, Raindrops. But he was scared sick from stage fright from the large crowd. No experience at all. His people were carried away with me putting him in the show. I forgot to get leftover programs, but I will have one for you. This afternoon we were at a beautiful nursing home in Watertown, fourth time, with a fast one-hour show. We were limited on time, and I brought too many, but we won. Four dancing girls, Patsy Morgan, Judy, Donna Laundry, and kid brother Charlie with songs, guitar, accordion, Mary. Cannot take any show this week as Andy is too busy, but next Monday in Quincy for the Eastern Star Group is the big one. The first time, about 300. They are older people and will be a cinch. I don't understand this. He said, I could get fooled, maybe. Oh, they'll like his show. I guess that's what he's saying. I could get fooled, maybe. I'm too cocky. I miss you, Debbie. Another letter soon. Me. XXX. Isn't he darling?
81.
81 years old.
Now, how long did you know him? 2 weeks.
Oh, a month. But I went to his show every week for that month. I started going the week after I met him. He asked me if I'd like to go, and I said yes, I would. And then I went every week after that.
3 weeks.
3 weeks. Three Wednesdays.
Now that was at Betsy's.
That was the what part?
Betsy's,
yes. In Newton.
Newton. Close, Newton close, yes.
It's close to Boston.
Boston.
It's about 10-15 minutes outside of Boston.
Betsy is one of the old friends that you worked with?
No, I went to college with Betsy.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know her very well at Duke, but she was working in Boston too when I was there, so I got to know her then. She's a programmer for one of the insurance companies in Boston, and she had gotten this apartment downstairs from Eddie until she got married the first week in October. And so I lived with her for a month and shared the rent with her until she got married.
And then you had to move out.
No, I stayed on another 2 weeks.
Roger, she moved out.
No, she stayed. Roger stayed too. The three of us lived there. Roger said I couldn't leave because he wouldn't have anything to talk to Betsy about. I was going to leave. I told him that I'd go stay. I had some other friends in Cambridge that I was going to stay with, and he said, no, don't leave, because what'll I talk to Betsy about?
Well, let me tell you, I don't know how they thrive on those jobs up there. She's a programmer for insurance,
mm-hmm.
And she survives?
She survives. He's a microbiologist, a bacteriologist. He does for this public health department.
Well, how does she manage it? She just goes in and puts in her 8 hours
and comes home. Yeah, she doesn't even talk to Eddie. Oh, they like Eddie. They just didn't have as much time to be with him as I did. They weren't home, you know, during the day to see him so much. But they really got something living downstairs from Eddie. I don't think they know.
Yeah.
How wonderful he is. They wouldn't go to his show. That was the big thing. The first week that I went, I said, well, let's all three of us go. I'll get Betsy and Roger to go, too, because they were going to be living downstairs, and the three of us could go. But they weren't really interested in going. They didn't want to go because they had they had other things to do for their wedding.
Could Russ go? Would she go?
She'd go, but she lives in New York, so.
Yeah, I know.
But she'd go.
Would Barbara go? She lives in New York.
Barbara Lawrence. I don't know whether she would or not. The Met Council Radical. I don't know. Russell would go. Russell would go.
Well, where did she get it?
I don't know.
From her mama? From Mississippi?
Maybe so. I'm not sure.
I never am either. Well, you see, I don't run into people like that. So I don't know. Of course, necessity is part of it. You have to do something, don't you?
Yes, you do. You have to. That's true.
But you don't talk about Betsy. You talk about Russell mostly.
Yes. Well, Betsy's very funny. She's very vague. When you talk to her, she's she's sort of like something's a little disconnected. She doesn't quite connect her sentences when she talks. But she's funny in that respect.
On purpose?
No, it's just the way she is. She just doesn't quite connect everything.
Yeah.
When she talks. And I always have the feeling that she's sort of in another plane, sort of, than everybody else, because she's just a little vague about life.
Yeah. But you didn't get to stay in New York long.
No, I stayed about a week. That's all. A little less than a week. Yeah.
But while you were there, you watched what Russell did. Russ did.
Well, I went to all her meetings with her. She goes to lots of meetings. She's a real radical organizer. She goes to lots and lots of meetings. She's very, I'm not political in the way that she's political. I keep seeing, as I wrote to you, I just see the groups that she's in rather than what it is that they're doing so much. But what she wants to do is work in urban housing when she's going to law school next fall. And she wants to work in urban housing when she gets out.
And she means business.
She does. she really does. Every year she gets more and more. She's a real puffy. she is.
But she doesn't show it when you're just sitting around talking to her.
Well, yes, she does. She's very definite about what she says. You know, she knows what she's talking about most of the time, and she's very definite about herself. She didn't used to be, but maybe it's living in New York that's happened. She's gotten so positive and definite about everything that she says and does.
But she got out of school when you did?
Yes, in 1969. Yes. And she's been in New York ever since.
That's where you learn fast. I mean, places like that, you learn fast. Don't you? You get lots of exposure.
Yes, it's a big place. I know. It's terribly fascinating, but it's also... I enjoyed it this time more than I ever have before because Russell is very enthusiastic about New York. She thinks that it's a wonderful place and that there's nowhere else in the country that you can do the things that you can do in New York, which is which is probably true. There are a lot of things that you can do in New York that you can't do other places. But at the same time, having to have armed guards on the streets and muggers and all that sort of thing is not. She's been mugged twice on her block, and I. That's why they have armed guards on the streets now. They have a block association, the building's on the block, and they hired someone to be there at night, till midnight. It's not very safe. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to tell you, David, you worked into something that took me so long to find out. I didn't know it. I don't think, you're not doing it critically, but you're doing it. you see, now take that little freshman I told you about. See, he could do that because I told him what to expect.
Uh-huh.
That is, he was going over there through what I had seen, and he never would have seen that. Well. You see, where you go, you've got someone to sort of key you in, to
mm-hmm.
give you a toehold.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that saves time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's half the battle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, down here, you see, I worked in the countryside for a long time. I just worked with them, plowed and raised animals and things like that. Then I got into this desk work so much, I've just lost out. I don't have anybody anymore. I'm clear out. I worked myself out of a job. You know how you say that. Well, but that's what I did. I found the people, and I looked at the countryside through their eyes,
mm-hmm.
and then reported on it. They reported on it, and then I reported on it. Along with that, and that's something they don't learn. Right there. I see Eddie can't tell you much. But Russ can tell you. But see, the people that told me were actually not educated. They were in the countryside. They're the people who had seen.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to work in my world. You're going to work in your own. But eventually, you can take a little look at it and see how it goes. And you talk about seeing. Little old black nigger down here has a view of this community just as intimate, just like O'Neill. It just puts me to shame. And see her and talk to her once, twice, you think all she knew is just who ran the store, and maybe these, some of these other people she spoke to on the way. But tell you about things, and furthermore, it sustains. You don't have to prompt her, no questions.
Mm-hmm.
It sustains.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to live in your own little poverty-stricken world for a while. Before you get into these little letters she can't read. Oh, yeah. I don't think anybody has ever heard that before. It's not, I don't see any record of it, that they've seen that. I see absolutely no sign of it. The scholars haven't seen it. They don't see anything anyhow. All they see is what's in the book. If they see a living human being, you see, they jump. And you see, I can't do him justice. There's too much there. And it can't go to waste. Well, how do we get into that? Well, that's what you've been doing. You've been doing it. You just worked into it. Just grew into it, didn't you?
I guess so. I said the other day, how did you learn to look at people?
Yes, however, whatever started that, you see, I didn't want to. Now, Eddie would be different, though, with someone else looking at him, talking to him. You don't know what he'd be. I've noticed that, you see, with different people talking to Miss Guthrie, say. She appears entirely different to them. And it's valid what they see is what I see. It's not what I see. What they see, I don't see. So, there you are. That was the cutest little story, what it was.
Yes. I love it. It's my favorite story in the whole world.
It's just phenomenal, isn't it?
It's wonderful. It is so funny. Oh.
Yeah.
Racing those dogs.
And the whole thing was, they could anticipate everything. Everything that happened.
I love when they're there lying down, taking a nap, and he goes outside, and there's Tommy's turtle right outside the house, sneaking around by the hedge.
That nap taking, you know, that's something, isn't it?
And all the toddies. Miss Aponsula said, you want to see how I sweeten my papa's toddy? And my papa always said, nothing sweet in a Mississippi toddy like the hand of a Mississippi lady. And did he want to see how I used to sweeten my papa's toddy? When she sends him the ribbon from her neck. She just said to tell you, success. Man's a genius. Really.
Well, now, you don't know anybody like that.
No.
Well, now, you don't know how much of that is is Uncle Buford, or how much is Faulkner, do you?
That's right.
Some of it, you know, would be Faulkner. Some of it. But you don't know anybody like that, do you?
No.
You think they're all gone?
Oh, I doubt it.
Where would you look?
Out here.
I see the ingredients of it. I don't see any of it quite that holds together like that. The plot, the action. There's so much action. I see in now you make me take the lead. I follow your lead. In what you said about Eddie, there's a good. No, there's not too much action in that, is there? Not as much as it is in Wise.
Not enough what Eddie says.
Hmm?
There's not enough of what Eddie says. I got too interested in watching the tap dancers. I didn't listen to him enough, I think. And most of the time he just talked about the tap dances too. He used to tell me about the acts that he had and how he'd line up the acts and make up different programs. And whether he'd gotten a new act, a new accordion player, a new piano player. Well, he never had a new piano player. He always had Andy. But he talked to me about the acts mostly.
Yeah.
And
is that the staple?
The act?
Of his talk.
Yes, his show.
That's
his show, and being a fireman, he can tell you about how many rings. He's a volunteer fireman, and when you call him on the phone, he answers the phone. Chief Lyons.
Oh,
really? He's a volunteer fireman for Newton, but he never goes and chases fires. He just has the radio in his bedroom, and he listens and finds out where all the fires are all over Newton, but he never goes and chases them. He has a little sign that says fire that sits in his car, and he turned it on for me the first day he took me to the out to the variety show. He turned it on and it lights up and flashes fire like that, and theoretically if he ever goes to a fire he turns on his fire sign and flashes it, but he never goes to fires. He just listens to the radio and then runs down and tells you whether, well, there was a big fire on 10th and Vine, not 10th and Vine, but Maple and Walnut this morning. It was a 10 truck fire. They had 10 trucks there. And he can tell by the number of buzzes that come over the speaker. He gets all the police calls too. It's a police radio. But mostly he just listens to it. I think he just likes to be in tune with what's on fire. Because he never goes out and chases them. He wouldn't be able to do too much if he got out and really actually chased the fire in his car. He doesn't drive too well either, so that would be a little bit of a problem.
So he's an honorary.
He's honorary, I think. He's a volunteer, and so probably went after the paid people are all used up fighting the fires. If he had to, he'd probably go out and fight the fires too. So he does the variety show all the time. That's what he's.
But now, does he tell you about any of the fires he's fit fought?
He's fit. No, he never told me any that he'd fought. He just told me about where they were and how many trucks were there, and and then his variety show doing benefits for people that died in fires. I have a feeling that that's how he got into doing it. Although he was a mailman before he was a firefighter, but he knows all of Boston, just all of. I told him I lived in Brookline, and he was ecstatic because he used to be a letter carrier in Brookline, and he knew exactly where my apartment was, exactly what corner it was on.
Did he?
He said, "I used to be a letter carrier for 25 years in Brookline. I used to walk all over Brookline."
And you're right where your corner
was. Right where it was. Yeah. I knew exactly where it was.
Well, you know, that's a bit unusual. Say, this continental-minded lady comes back home and talks to the firefighter.
And the letter carrier. Not a mailman, he's a letter carrier. He was always very specific to call himself a letter carrier. There must be more prestige in carrying letters than carrying mail.
Oh.
Yeah. No, you don't just carry the parcel post, you carry letters too.
Oh.
Always should I knew that.
Well, this is sort of a full-time job, isn't it?
I guess I talk to him every day, pretty much, or I'd see him every day. We didn't always talk a whole lot, because I think he felt that he thought he'd bore people or something, you know, because I'd always ask him to come in and sit and talk to
but
me.
But he never came in.
And he never came in. He wouldn't come in, and he always would say, oh, I'm real busy, I gotta get off now, and then he'd run off, you know, he'd stop and talk to me for a while, or sometimes I'd be leaving, and he'd give me a ride somewhere, because he'd be going off. One morning I told him I was going into Boston, I was going out to catch the bus, and so he gave me a ride to catch the bus, and then the bus wasn't there, and he was so distressed because there wasn't a bus there, and he didn't want me to have to wait on the curb, and I said, well, it's all right, Eddie, I've taken this bus before. I can wait for the bus. I'm a big girl. And he wouldn't leave. He sat there in the car until the bus came. Because I was one of his young girls. He didn't want me waiting on the curb.
But he had that feeling of propriety or something or other, where he wouldn't come in. He didn't want to be intruding.
Yes, he didn't want to. I guess he thought he'd intrude or bore or something like that. Because I'd ask him all the time to come, and he just wouldn't come in. But part of that is, that's New England, too. People are reserved in little towns.
Oh.
Up in Mount Vernon, too, people are very reserved.
You speak to them in the street.
Yes, and you be careful who you ask home for tea. But that's the sort of austerity of New England, and I think that they're much more sort of French. They don't ask people in, or have a stronger sense of sort of personal privacy. I haven't run into as much in the South, but I don't. Perhaps I would if I. You know, perhaps people are more.
Well, now you see, Debbie's seen all these things by herself, eh? Took me working with all sorts of people. Took me. Gee whiz. I probably haven't seen as much as she has. But part of the writing, of course, is seeing. And you've got to talk, and to talk you've got to manipulate it a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and manipulate the occasions,
mm-hmm.
Make it flexible, but work out, you see, make the occasions. Now you see, I've got this hay equipment here. Well, it costs me money to make hay. See, I could save money just by buying it, but it puts me into the countryside, and. Well, it helps a good bit. It makes me feel in the countryside, too. And you see, like that, I can stand out there and look at the hay equipment, and you see, that's occasion enough for almost anything. And talking in here. You see, the hay will line it out. but see, I break through everything, nothing cut and dried. There's no tea drinking, for instance. You see, it's just on the wing, across the back fence. Well, in the way you say it, but you still have to provide an occasion for it. The occasion brings out the talk.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do this in town. Couldn't do it at the office. It just, everything would dry up. But you can. I mean, you don't care where you are. It doesn't really matter, you see.
Mm-hmm.
It does to me, but it doesn't to you. And then you go to your typewriter and look at it, see what you found.
Mm-hmm.
And then you work from that. But it's always an attack. Nothing just happens. You make it happen. Well, you know, you don't appear to, but you're prepared, you might say.
Well, you went with Eddie.
Yes, that's the occasion.
Yeah.
And I talked to him every day, practically. I mean, I didn't sit down and spend an hour with him, but I'd talk to him every day, you know, and make the occasion for going with him.
Yeah.
Or have him ask me up to see his pictures.
Now, how'd he get those pictures?
They gave them to him. Oh, that's why he wants a picture of me.
Put in his gallery.
To put in his gallery. I told him I wasn't in his troupe. I couldn't sing and dance. Then I told him one day I'd practiced my flute one afternoon, and I told him that I'd been playing my flute, and he was just so distressed that I hadn't asked him to come down and hear me play the flute, because maybe I could have played it. And I said, "Well, Eddie, the only thing I can play anymore is Mary Had a Little Lamb, and I don't really think you want me and my flute in your show." But now he gets pictures of his performers.
I see. I had to keep the, and he keeps the house so.
The house is a museum to the Eddie Lyons Variety Show. The walls are just covered with plaques that he's gotten. He's been doing this variety show since about 1945. And he's been getting plaques and things like that from various nursing homes and hospitals and charitable organizations and things like that for, how many years is that? 30 years. That's a lot of plaques.
That's a lot of plaques.
But the floor
is all polished and everything.
Oh, that was just that. The house is just lovely. It's a real old house with lots of fireplaces around. And the parquet floors, I've never seen floors like that. They're all inlaid around. There'd be an inlaid border all the way around the rooms of crossed light wood and dark wood. And then an inside strip of light wood and an outside strip of light wood. Just lovely. I'd never seen floors
like
so pretty. And the dining room was it had a big bay window at one end, and then it was square down at the bottom. I was going to say it was like a hexagon, but it was square at one end. And the floor went around the bay window to the strips of the crosses of parquet. It was just so beautiful. Really nice. Betsy and Roger were going to buy a lot of rugs, and I told them they were crazy to cover up the floors.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Significant factor in the result.
A lot has been made of the claim that if Denver had the games, they would gain a lot of facilities that would benefit the general public. Yet, if we do indeed lose them, as it now looks like we will have lost a speed skating rink, a luge run, and a ski jump.
And they've got to live here for a couple of years before they can go into practice. I don't know how true that is, but we do need more doctors in the state of Florida today.
I don't know where the... I don't care about the state of Florida.
National.
Yeah, national. They're supposed to be on it, let me say. Well, how'd he get a hold of a house like that?
I don't know.
He got no family? Just him?
He was married to a nurse who worked in one of the nursing homes that he used to go to the show. But she died, and he's now living with her sister, who came to live with him after she died. Mm-hmm. And they just sort of bicker back and forth. They don't like each other at all. Not at all. And he doesn't hide it a bit.
Huh?
Oh. He doesn't hide it a bit. He doesn't like his wife's sister. He thinks she's a pretty useless human being because she watches so much television. She watches television from 6 o'clock in the afternoon till 12 o'clock at night every night. Color television. She keeps house and she takes care of the garden. They have roses in the garden, and she takes care of the roses for him.
Well, that's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, she works pretty hard for him, I guess.
Well, she's not 81.
No, she's. I have no idea how old she is, but she's quite a bit younger than he is. And then they have a phantom boarder who lives in the roof. They have a room in a up in the roof that they rent to a man who works at the drugstore on the corner. And we knew that he lived up there, but no one had ever seen him. He comes and goes and mysteriously. So we called him the phantom boarder because we never saw him. And I asked Eddie about him one day because we were coming back from. It was one evening when we came back from one of the shows, and the light was on upstairs. And he said, "Oh, Mr. So and So is home." And I said, "Oh, yes, you have someone who lives in the roof." And he said, "Yes, that he worked at the drugstore." And I said, "No, well, wasn't that interesting?" And then I said, "Was it an apartment up there? Did he have a kitchen and everything?" And he said, "No, that he ate at the Howard Johnson's at the corner. He had all his meals at the Howard Johnson's, and Eddie never saw him." By the way, he's a phantom boarder for Eddie, too.
Debbie, what interests you in this Eddie business? Well, now, something does.
I guess what Eddie does. I just think he's so fascinating. I think he's what interests me. And the variety show interested me. I mean, I really wanted to see it. I wanted to see what it was that a variety show was all about. I'd never seen one before. Never seen a lot of tap dancers. And so I went to the variety show just to see what that would be like. But then I was interested in Eddie. If you'd seen the variety show once, you'd seen it. There was nothing else to see there except the different hospitals that they went to. But I was just interested in Eddie, in seeing him get up and... Well, he actually had a pretty easy job because he never changed his... I thought maybe he'd change what he said every week about the acts, but he didn't. He said the same thing all the time. And he used to do singing, too, in the show. And one night, one of the little girls was up dancing around, and Eddie had the mic over in the corner, and so he started singing into the mic, you know, while this little girl was doing acrobatics or whatever it was that she was doing. I've forgotten now. She's tap dancing, I guess. They mostly tap dance. And so Eddie sang Home on the Range or Home Sweet Home or whatever it was, singing away, and he really had a good voice. So I told him afterwards that he should get up and sing too. He was a lot better than Mary. I didn't tell him that. But he just...
Let me tell you, Debbie. Now you know, I was interested in your piece on Eddie, but not for your reason. You're clearer in it than he is. So if you would do it again, you wouldn't do it the same, would you?
No, probably not. I have to see. I have to work on it again.
You didn't work on that. How long did it take you?
Hour. Hour and a half.
Yeah.
I sat down and typed it. Another one about Harvard I did in about 30 minutes one afternoon.
Well, that's the way it ought to be. You know, I had, when I wrote you that little note about the, the Steph Van Burnham. Remember that one? Well, there was more to that than seemed.
Why?
Rick had done this nice piece on the little revolution in Micanopy, the town council. It got bogged down in it. There was so much of it. But it was still, he handled it pretty well. And I just took it in, or he did, took it into Alton, let him sit, just run through it, you know, he didn't have to study it. And he took a little piece of tape that Wade Swicor did. Because what we did, what Rick did, what I went along with him, and what we did, we followed, we looked at it through Wade's eyes. And somehow that Wade took hold over there, and it's remarkable things he saw. And you see, Rick would never have seen it. He didn't know the people. I wouldn't have seen it because I didn't even like them. I took it in. Rick took it in. I went back by, and Alton says, you know, boy, your friend there is pretty well into this. He says, you know, what I'd do, he says, you know this fella, I forget his name, he's over in creative writing, loudmouth, Tim, right, capable fella, young fella. I'd just turn this boy over to him. The next thing he said, do you know what this young man's plans are? About taking some courses? So you see, that was the note I wrote you.
Uh-huh.
See, Rick doesn't know anything about creative writing. And, you didn't, might say. Well, by the time you find out, you'd have to get all fired up again. All this would be gone, you see. You're gone. Because it's such a delay. And it's all, that's all cold-blooded. That's all malice aforethought. You know, everything you put in there has a place. There ain't no iron half stuff to that. Or no. I don't think there is. Maybe you could get by with it.
I doubt it.
So, they can't see that. They don't let the boys, they don't let people have any line. They don't give them the rein.
No freedom.
Huh?
Yeah.
And what they do, see, I see that all the time, and it's something. Well, they wouldn't know what to do with all that stuff over in the creative writing department. They'd be overwhelmed with it. They don't. They don't use information or experience. They just, it's in their way. Oh, they say, I noticed this when I was in the merchant marine back in World War II. Something like that. Some vague impression that they got.
War stories.
What?
War stories. A good standby.
That's what you get into. Now that's, but now you see, you can't turn your back on, because that's the nearest to anything mental in the whole society. It's still not mental. It's pedestrian. You see, they wind up more than they produce.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking course. It's not worth a hootie. Who wants to know about Peter the Plowman? Chaucer's contemporary. They'll give it to you. Because they've got a professor of theater, the Plowman, who needs a seminar to provide over. It's just like whoever gets to be president. And we got half of 50,000 big bulldozers out there. They can't stand idle. You got to see to it. Is there something for those bulldozers to push around?
Public works.
There are now, you see, I don't mean to throw off on them, Debbie, because I depend on them too much, and that's, you see, I'm a part of it, too. and it's the only base I've got, so I can't knock the block out from under myself. But, you see, from your point of view, there's traps there. Well, you see, I know very little. My experience covers so little. You see, I've never gone far. And I don't know, but I can see a little farther than I've gone. Just a little farther. They write their own fiction up there and then have their own organs to publish it in.
At the campus?
All of them do. All campuses do. And it stays on the campus. It doesn't circulate. Or maybe goes to some other campus.
Goes into another department, maybe.
Well, that's the way it is. Well, I mean, that's what you have to sort of cope with. Gee whiz, those two cars, same color, aren't they? About it. I'll take the one on the left. I don't know your working habits or anything like that.
We got off course headquarters. I know. I know.
Big, big.
Let me tell you, there's two or three little things. Sooner or later, I want to get you to work out some good things you've done, Birch, but that's just sooner or later. your fine schools. Now they can do a lot of things. But none of their products, graduates, can get off the ground and handle their own experience. None. They'll have to be an archaeologist, like Margaret Mead, and that'll take her 15, 20 years. You see, you got to go to Samoa, and write on the culture there, you see, before you have something to write on. Now, that's not right, you see. I learned that from Suzanne. Didn't I tell you about that, those little things she did about lungs?
I don't think so.
Horse stable?
I don't think so. No, we didn't.
Yeah. Well, for some odd reason, Jim, he got crossed up over there with his master's thesis. And he just all of a sudden went down to the lungs and got a job of all places. Lums. And they had that little horse out here, and they got tired to take care of it, so after 6 months we got them to take it to it. I thought maybe they'd butcher it, make hamburger out of it. But they took it to the horse stable up there. Every now and then Suzanne would start talking about horses, and I'd cut her off. I interested in horses, but not Suzanne's version of horses. Well, this time she got to talking about lungs. And I thought, well, she'll get over that in a minute. But what caught my attention, she'd never been in. Boy, except maybe wait for Jim to get through and go on home. Jim didn't ever sit down and tell her what on at Lums. He's not that type. He's a forestry man. But very often he'd get burnt up in there and pressed, you know, and when he went home, he'd start muttering. Little bits and pieces, you see, never anything sustained. And Suzanne put them together. And that's what she was reporting from. And it was a method that attracted me. I thought it was just phenomenal. You didn't have to have Tuck Mack or Phil Patterson or Miss Anna or Mark Twain to report to her what went on. She could take these little old fragments. She'd do it on purpose, just as naturally. And she had a connected thing there. I said, Suzanne, write it out for me. Just see how it looked. Well, she wasn't the promptest thing in the world, but she finally got it down. Sustained long. And I took her up on the horses, and she did that. And what I saw was, you see, she could go over there with those horse people, and also at Lums. And I couldn't. I couldn't even go. And then she could hear what went on. I couldn't. Now, somewhere in there, you see, between the time you get enough education to do you for life and all that rest of it, they pile on. You see, the mind is working. You see, and they have control of all those gifts. That's what I saw. But I couldn't tell anyone up there. There's not got no place for us, you see. What I could do, you see, just from that, I could just live an exciting life sitting here at the table. I just have a little following all the time. They go down to the courthouse and tell to the courts. They'd see more than I'd see. That's true. So much goes to waste. And the real reporting, you see, is why your mind's fresh. Before you get crippled. Well, you know, I don't mean to tear too far. Just, you know, So, oh, I don't know. I picked out a few little points here and there, you see, about reporting. I call it reporting, not just writing. I'm not a writer. So, I don't know. I think there's something. If people set out to go into the ministry or teach school or be writers, I think it disables their mind. I think it'd be much easier if they just wouldn't say that. If they happen to write a little bit, all right, but just don't say I'm going to be a writer or something like that. You see. I think it does something to them. It does. It imposes tasks on them they're not up to.
I don't admit it.
I don't like that.
I don't admit it.
Yeah. The only